Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Promoting peace, liberty, and prosperity around the clock. LibertyTalk.fm.
Welcome to Living the Solution with Dr. Elena George. Today I have one of my favorite people on. I call her a special friend because we've gone through a lot, through the trenches together, and I've learned a great deal from her. And this is a person who cares about our future as a country, as a human being, quite frankly. And education is the underpinning of our society. I loved going to school. I remember teachers from first grade. And what they taught me was that I was important, that I was special, that I wasn't like anybody else, and that as an individual, I should do the best that I can. It had nothing to do with what I looked like, how much money my family had, or anything of that nature. It was me as an individual. And I think we're in a world of trouble right now with our education system. COVID is a problem, but the, I would say, indoctrination of children to not like themselves, not like each other, not like their parents, is going to bear some serious fruit in the future. So I wanted to welcome back Ms. Lynn Taylor. She's also known as the Common Core Diva, and she has a website. A website, commoncorediva.com, a Facebook page, and now a new podcast called Liberty Bells, which airs on Thursday mornings. And I'm sure we'll hear more about that as we go along. But Lynn, I wanted to thank you so much for coming on, because I know you have your ear to the ground. You do research. You're not just talking. You're actually reading the manuals and what's coming out and what they're telling us that they're going to do that everybody's not paying attention to.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Elena. It's a joy to be back with you as well as your audience. And I do hope that everyone is staying well.
Indeed. Before the show, I was asking a lot of questions, and I want to make sure that we cover all these bases, because it's coming fast. I mean, everything that you basically said about the education system is coming to pass. But with COVID, it seems that there's winners and losers in this. And so I want to start off with the COVID situation and the homeschool versus being able to go to class. From my perspective, it seems like it's affecting children who have working parents who have to go out and work more than anybody else, race aside. Is that true?
Well, absolutely, because you've got a situation, and you know, we're a year into it, where you've got families who are not used to being around each other so much, and now they're thrown together. And of course, we all know that the longer that you're around people you're not really used to, even if it's your family, conflicts will arise. And so this is why we're seeing, under the name of COVID and supposed education relief, because, you know, we know Congress has thrown billions of dollars for that very thing. Education has not gotten better. The family situation has gotten worse. And now we're seeing the schools using things like sexuality and race to pit students against teachers and families against each other.
It's a very loaded question. But what's the motive for that? There has to be a bigger picture to turn over the board to this degree. I mean, is there something I'm missing?
No, I don't think we're missing it. I think it's part of the conversation no one is daring to have, and that's the problem. And I think this is a great solution, because I know that's what your show is all about, is having these really open, honest, and gut-wrenching conversations about what is going on. You know, I was on an interview a couple of weeks ago on another show, and I got asked a similar question. And I said, you know, I really think the COVID is a distraction. And, you know, upon further reflection, yeah, it's a distraction in some ways, Dr. Elena, to some of the things that is going on with the government, but it's also distracting education from what it should be. And it's more turning it into what we have seen happen in our other shows when we've talked about the demise of education. So mm-hmm. That continuing dumbing down, that continued indoctrination, that continued swaying of family values, attitudes, and beliefs are continuing to happen. And it's all through what's known as the social and emotional learning, which I know you and I have spoken at length about. before on other episodes. Mm-hmm. And I would invite your audience to go back in and access those particular archives as well, because that very much not only attacks the attitudes, values, and beliefs, but it helps reshape the brain and it helps pave the avenue for, okay, we're going to insert quasi-science for what facts should be there. And that's what we're seeing happen. And it's through that quasi-science that you're seeing so much about COVID or sexuality come in and take the place of what has been bona fide, scientifically proven.
Well, what happened to, and let's take a step back then, it seems right. that the goal of education has changed. Before, it was about getting skills and being able to critically think. You have to have a background or a foundation in order to have a platform to go further, right? If that's right. doing math, if that's knowing how to construct a sentence in English, having a dictionary and knowing your vocabulary, what the heck happened? I don't see that happening anymore. It's like if you speak well, you're racist. You know, if you want right. to construct a sentence, all of a sudden you're the worst person in the world and it's, you know, white supremacy. What is up with that?
Well, it's being driven by the false narrative behind the critical race theory. And it's really interesting because some of the same tenets to this critical race theory are now showing up in the social justice movement. It's also showing up in the ultra feminism movement that is attacking our very physical bodies.
Mm-hmm. And let's talk about that for a second, because I was on your website mm-hmm. and I went to a Facebook page of somebody who, I think she's a Berkeley student, and she's written lots of articles on the intersection of feminism. And
right.
I mean, the things that it's not science based. So they're saying things like, if you're a tall man, you're automatically, in a position to attack women, and women should have, you know, different things about people that they can't change. For example, if you're too right. tall, if you're heavy, if you're mm-hmm. skinny, they're mm-hmm. all, I don't care what you are. There's something wrong with you that's in the face of somebody else and it must be corrected. I mean, it just sounds ridiculous.
Well,
platform shoes, really?
Yeah, it does sound ridiculous, but it's a growing movement that, you know, if you're a certain weight or you're a certain height, you're going to be more prone to either be attacked or do the attacking. And let's stop and think about real facts here and real studies. Attackers do not give a fig how tall, how thin, how heavy, how short. They only have one goal in mind, and that is to do harm and exercise control. And no amount of any kind of platform shoe or any kind of bodysuit that would make you look thinner or heavier or any of these other artificial aids are really going to help you. In fact, they may impede you from being able to escape safely.
I would say so if you're wearing platform shoes and you're trying to run. It's right. like no common sense with it. It's almost, I was reading, I'm like, is this a joke?
Right.
Post? I couldn't even believe someone seriously right. was saying these things.
Right. Well, supposedly this particular person, her name is Anita, is some sort of professor. Now, I could not find any proof to that, but she has a Facebook page called Anita's Hall of Social Justice and Intersectional Feminism. Well, now I'd never heard of what intersectional feminism is, so I went and looked it up, and lo and behold, there is an American law professor by the name of Kimberly Crenshaw, who was given credit for creating this intersectional term, and supposedly how it attaches to feminism, Dr. George, mm-hmm. is that any issue that leads to privilege is somehow connected to the assault on women, whether it's through the job market, through the physical aspect, or through the economic aspect. So this particular social justice is taking that tenet and now turning it on its head to the fact of, yes, we have to raise awareness to the fact that, you know, the rape culture is so thick in both Canada and America that the only solution is to equalize as much as we can between those who are being portrayed as victims and those who are being portrayed as the attackers. But again, victims and attackers do not go along lines of, like I said, height, weight, skin color, economic status, you know, an attacker, it doesn't matter if it's a man or a woman, because both men and women get attacked. Both men and women can be raped, and it, you know, they can be, it's no respecter. It absolutely is no respecter on how you look. It's sick.
Well, on that note, let's take our first break and come back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor, Common Core Diva. And we were teasing apart the education system. And it's more like re-education system at this point, because there doesn't seem to be a objective movement towards just teaching children. It's about molding them. And, you know, back in the day, I remember people talking about Head Start and all these education systems where you would get the children in earlier in age, and you would keep them like the whole school year, basically. Mm-hmm. So they're always in school in some manner. Was that some method or the predating of this, where you can have full access to a child from cradle pretty much through 18, where you have them and you just keep pounding them and you keep making them feel, it's like they're in jail almost.
I mean, right. And, you know, that's not by accident. That is actually part of the plan that has been unfolding in our nation for years. And if you look at other countries, especially through the United Nations lens, it's already been going on in those countries. And so we are one of the last strongholds of freedom. And the only way to break us, to make us be more conformed to the rest of the world, is to come in and attack our education and our social and emotional learning, down to the point where we're using ridiculous things like social justice in its twisted form, okay? Because there is a pure part of social justice that we should be using. But it's, again, this is a catchphrase. This is a wordplay that mm-hmm. has been taken advantage of. Because if you look at true social justice, even back to the Bible, Dr. Elena, you're going to see that it was something you were charged with, that you felt impassioned over, so that you could go out and make a difference. And the twisted version of social justice is using a collective form, a militant attitude, to supposedly end all oppression. But what we're seeing is that it's becoming a bully pulpit, and this twisted look at attackers, and, you know, we have to make everybody the same height, because after all, if we make everybody the same height, no attacking will be going on, which is poppycock. You know, same thing with, you know, if you're too thin or you're too large.
Mm-hmm. You know, you can actually go a little deeper. I think I see an even more sinister a segue to this.
Okay.
Because there is no genetic component to, in their minds, sex. I mean, there's no male or female. It's what the social construct says it is. Mm-hmm. There's no race, because you can say that today I feel like a Black woman, or tomorrow, and you're supposed to just take it. There's no pronouns. You can't say he, her, you know, you can't use a sex pronoun. So you're just a them. I mean, is this the method? And it's a kind of a, I don't know, an interesting question, but, you know, we talk about technocracy and transhumanism and redesigning the mm-hmm. human being. Mm-hmm. Is this the slippery slope towards being able or trying to do that? I mean, if there is no, it's just a hodgepodge and you can genetically change things, then, I mean, how are we to know that they're not trying to soften us up to do that so that we can all be the same?
Well, you know, that's very interesting. And I would hazard a guess, knowing what we have already discussed in previous shows and, you know, going and looking at research that you can easily find out there, because the evidence is out there. You just have to want to look at it, no matter how disgusting it might be, is that, yeah, I think it is. And, you know, if you go and you look at the websites for those vaccines that are being given out in the name of COVID relief, Moderna has it on their website in plain sight. You have to scroll down to see it, though. Get off the main headline and scroll down, and you will see the tracking system that is built in. And you and I have discussed before mm-hmm. about, okay, if they're going to insert things into us, supposedly it's supposed to, you know, kill this virus, but it's not that far removed to see the other more deeper side that you just brought up of how they can manipulate that against us. And that's precisely what is being set up to usher in the transhumanism that artificial intelligence has to thrive on. But now here's the interesting thing. If you look at the way that we were created, there are distinct differences between the male brain and the female brain, just like there are differences distinctly between a child's brain and an adult's brain. But again, this twisted system does not respect those differences. It wants to make them all the same because the reason why is for control and profit. And that's exactly what all this stuff is. Now, when I said that Kimberly Crenshaw was behind this intersectional feminism, she is also one of the key people, Dr. Elena, who is behind this critical race theory push. And if you look deeply into the critical race theory people who are purporting this, it's supposed to be a mass indoctrination that attacks us, and it's using the real civil rights movement that Dr. Martin Luther King started to say, hey, we're the same thing, we mean the same thing, when there are two distinct different platforms going on.
Let's explore that. I don't think I really personally understand, because I just ignore it when it hits me. Mm-hmm. What is critical race theory? I mean, overall, it seems like white people bad.
Yeah.
Black people good.
Yeah.
And there's nothing you can do to change it. You just have to acquiesce. Is that really what this is?
That's basically in a very simple nutshell. Yes, that's it. And I'm supposed to feel so bad about my skin color if I'm a certain skin color, mm-hmm. that I make it up to everyone, that I, you know, hang my head, that I'm ashamed of who I am. And this is so against what we were taught as people who follow God, because we're a new creation in Christ. There is nowhere in the Bible that you will find where God or Jesus or even the Holy Spirit goes, well, this skin color is bad, this skin color is good, and we're going to promote racism. No, because God doesn't give a rat's bottom about what shade your skin color is, because we all have the same blood. We all have the same creator, and there is only one race, and that is the human race. Now, the way that racism has attached itself to critical race theory and been bastardized, if you will, is because it is based on the evolution theory that somehow there's going to be one skin color that is always going to be better off and one skin color that's going to be worse off. But what do you do about all the other skin colors that are somehow in between? No, this attaches itself back to the communism, the Stalinism, the Nazism, the Hitlerism about, okay, there's a superior race. No, there's not. There is not. And math is not racist. English is not racist. You know, history's not racist unless we make them so.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think you can turn that around. And the people who are so caught up with the inequalities, they're actually literally putting in place a system that will keep people or actually promote inequality. You can't get right through life without speaking. I'm going to say being able to communicate in a way that everybody can understand you. You cannot get through life without being able to understand math and numbers. And they're trying to tell these kids, you don't have to learn it because it's racist. So right, what are we supposed to do? You're going to end up at the bottom of society. Brave New World, anybody? Where those are the people who just get to be everybody's, you know, cleanup person. That's
exactly
totally ridiculous.
Exactly. And that's where the danger of the skill-based labor through the social and emotional learning is coming to fruition, because they've got it classified into two distinct skill sets, Dr. Elena. One is called the hard skills, and that would be what you can do with your hands or what you can, you know, complete. And then the soft skills are all the things that are in your brain, like what are you thinking and what are you feeling and all that kind of stuff. And so there's an excellent video out there on YouTube. It's part three of a six-part series. It was done about 11 years ago by the lady of the name of Bev Ekman. And she was telling you about the successful ways that this psychological warfare through education, or as it should be called, indoctrination, has become so successful. And that is when you repeat misinformation enough and often enough and in several different ways, you are successful in retraining someone to think the way that you want them to think, not the way that they were wired to think.
So imagine a child who is not mature, whose brain is constantly changing and new connections being made. Mm-hmm. Imagine the power you can have over that age group.
Yeah.
They never know. I mean, and then from a neuro psychology or a neurophysiology standpoint, they may never create the connections for critical thinking, for individuality, for being able to say no.
Right.
I mean, this is wow. It's like a sci-fi.
But one of the things they are going to be able to do, now they won't be able to think on their own, not what true critical thinking is. They will be able to think collectively, and they will be able to be wonderful conformists, because that is the agenda behind this. You know, I mean, it's one of these things that's connected to again, not only to the critical race theory, but to the social and emotional learning, is that if you're not conforming to what the status quo or the flavor of the month is, then you're just all kinds of awful and evil, and you're not even worth being around because, ooh, you don't think like I think, and I think the way that I'm being told to think.
Yeah, we kind of see that now, don't we? The people who want to go and live their lives, and they go maskless, and they're being physically attacked by people who don't know science, not mm-hmm. trying to read science. Even mm-hmm. the CDC is telling people that the masks don't work, but it's in your face. They literally write this. And at the end of it, well, you should wear a mask anyway, but it doesn't do anything. It hasn't stopped the spread, hasn't decreased the risk of people getting case number, but you should still wear it anyway. I mean, it's almost like you're living in this alternate reality where everybody knows the truth. Not everybody. People who choose not to know the truth don't know it. And that's their choosing, in my opinion. But those of us who know it are being polite and quiet and just kind of, I don't want to ruffle a feather. But the longer we do that, the further down this path we're getting. And at some point, the seniors are not going to be here mm-hmm. and know what came before, being able to fix a lamp and all the skills that they have will be gone. And we're going to be left with people who can't even change a light bulb, but will go to the mat against you if you raise your hand and question anything.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
It is. It's absolutely sickening. And, you know, it has had me scratch my head several times going, where are the people? Where are the parents? Because I know the parents are being attacked with all this. I mean, good grief. Of course they are, because you have parents who don't think in the same way that the school thinks or that the curriculum thinks, you know? And that was one of the things that we saw when the supposed new math came out back in the 70s or the 80s.
Yeah, the parents couldn't even do it.
Yeah, the parents couldn't do the homework. And so when the Common Core math came out, they were like, oh, well, it's all that all over again. No. It's a yes and a no, because yes, the parents couldn't do it, but it wasn't because it was such a new way of thinking of math. It was because the new way that Common Core had put it, it was arbitrary. I mean, you know, 2 + 2 = 4. That's a fact. It can't be 5. It can't be 6. But if Johnny or Susie says, well, you know, I think 2 + 2 =, you know, 10, as long as they can supposedly justify their thinking, they get an okay. You cannot base any sort of architectural prowess or construction or even doctor on faulty math like that. You're going to kill someone.
Agreed. And on that note, we take our next break, because it's a hard break, and we'll come right back. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living a Solution. We're speaking with Miss Lynn Taylor. And before the break, you made a lot of just honest statements. But again, this is a system that's built on, it's shifting sand. There's no truth involved. So I guess it is in their system okay to make up a number and say it's fact when it's not. Black is white, white is black, male is female. It just doesn't make a lot of sense. But you made a very important point, which I want to explore. Mm-hmm. Where are the parents? I understand people have to work. I get that. But my parents rolled, they both worked. And if something went down in my school, they were up there, bells on, guns blazing to make sure that their child got what I was supposed to get. What's going on with the parents? Do they just cede their authority like this?
You know, that's a very interesting question, Dr. Elena. And I'm going to give a couple of different scenarios because since I don't know what everybody's doing, because, you know, we're supposed to all not, you know, congregate. I will tell you, based on my research and my experience, you do have some parents who are actually showing up to the school board meetings and those who are actually showing up. But what we're seeing is that the parents are becoming more and more marginalized for that speaking up. It's kind of like with the critical race theory. If you happen to dare even question it, that automatically puts you in a category of, you know, you're a racist, you know, well, you like the white supremacists. Well, what if you don't? What if you're actually questioning them? You know, I'm one of those people who I was taught to question everything. It wasn't mm-hmm. that I was being disrespectful. It's that I need to totally understand from several different ways how something works so that it makes sense for me to understand it. Mm-hmm. And what we're seeing from our school boards is because they are being so micromanaged by all these social agendas from all these different Common Core curriculum resources and all these big time bureaucrat lobbyists and all these other people who are just throwing money at education, you know, without really fixing it, because there is no fixing it. But the point of it is the school boards are puppets and they are doing what they're told to do. And when a parent comes up or a group of parents comes up and they question, unless the parents have some sort of huge presence and very big firmness, they're not going to be heard because the system doesn't want them to be heard.
Well, I have two questions on that regard. Mm-hmm. I know that this is an agenda and it's a bureaucratic government-based agenda, but where did it start? Is this the UN driving this? And do other countries, are they doing the same thing we are doing to our kids?
Other countries have been doing it a lot longer. We have been doing it. Let's see, I have evidence on my blog from a policy paper that was written back. It's a research and policy paper that was written back in 1968. And it was an experiment that was conducted on the Chicago inner city schools. And it was all about this mastery-based education, which involves not only the hard skills of what you can do with your hands, but the soft skills of what you will be thinking. And here we are in 2021. And not only has that long ago experiment that was started in one place, it's now everywhere in the nation, and it's putting more credence to your competency, you know, of what you can do over what you think, what's going on in your life, what's going on in your family. It doesn't care about that. It only cares what you can do so that you can be a cog in that wheel. And the big push behind this experiment was not for Johnny and Susie in Chicago inner city schools to have academic prowess, as it was to be cogs in a wheel, not for a public benefit, but for a private sector benefit. So in other words, we're seeing private-public partnerships, mm-hmm. which we have discussed before mm-hmm. on previous shows, and how fascist they are. It's a pay-as-you-go system. And now we're seeing that education is trying to be privatized on a national level, not for academic prowess, but for an economic gain, because the economy is more important than the people.
Well, it's always about corporate driven, isn't it? Healthcare right. has become that way.
Right.
What is it? The, oh my gosh, I can't remember what they're called, but the business lobby mm-hmm. was all about globalism And they want as cheap labor as they can possibly get. But, you know, if nobody wants to be an entrepreneur, if nobody wants to be the opposition or the people that actually they have to go up against, they don't want competition. They want to be the only game in town and then co-opt everybody else into it.
Right.
But it's never the best case scenario. It's always the lowest common denominator.
Right. And that's and that's why you're seeing the education bar go so low. I mean, people are going to sit there and go, yeah, well, the National Assessment on Education Progress Scores in America have taken a nosedive. Well, there's a reason why. It's not just Common Core. It's part of the plan towards the globalization. Because again, America has to be a good conforming UN member state. We cannot be a free nation. If we were a free nation, we wouldn't have some of the garbage that we're seeing in our education or what's being passed off as education, okay? This is all a means to an end to create good global citizens, not free-thinking Americans.
I think you can go even further, and you said it, and I just want to repeat it. We had to, and we are dropping our standard of living, of education, of healthcare to fit in with the global system. It's not like they're coming up to our standard. We had to drop our standard. I remember back when, I guess it was the Clinton administration, that's when globalism kind of started. We were outsourcing and we didn't pay much attention to it at the time, but this is, we reap what they sowed at this point. And when it comes down to children, this is, it's abusive, frankly.
Right,
it is. You're taking a bright light. Everybody's got it. You know, you're born with it. And someone is snuffing it out, making you feel bad about yourself based on things that you cannot control. And I find that to be just devious. And any parent, I mean, I'm not judging, but if your child comes out from your home to kindergarten, they come back and they don't know if they're a boy or a girl, and they feel bad about themselves because of what they look like, I would have a problem with that.
Well, we should be having problems with it because, you know, you're right. It is abuse. And we should be teaching to celebrate our differences because that's what God does. He has celebrated us as his creations, and we are supposed to do the same. We're supposed to care for each other. We're supposed to help each other. We're not supposed to control each other and make each other feel ashamed for what they look like. I mean, that's oppression. But yet all this is supposedly being done, Dr. Elena, to alleviate oppression, but it's creating more.
It's absolutely. And I'll give you an example. I had a patient that I saw recently who came in because he had a traumatic brain injury. He was hit in the head by people who lived in his complex, and they did it because of George Floyd. Mm-hmm. And he happened to be white, and it was the black people that attacked him. And they did it twice with the mindset of it was okay because they were getting back for something that happened in a different state. It had nothing to do with the gentleman. He was a totally normal guy, but he was the victim because it made it okay to attack somebody. And I don't care if it's verbal. In this case, it was physical. His life will never be the same based on something he had nothing to do with. And there's no empathy. There's no feeling of right or wrong. It's just someone tells you to do something and you have the license to go out and do it. And I really still have a problem with that as well.
Well, and you should, because, you know, you are a doctor with true ethics, but we're seeing many doctors who are not being this way. They're just, they don't even acknowledge it. It's just, well, you know, you shouldn't have been there. And somehow it turns out that it's your fault that you got hurt when it's totally out of your control. And I think that to me is something that I think the medical community needs to get behind as what is being taught. What happened to the Hippocratic Oath? And, you know, I know we went over that. It's been replaced with these globalism ideals that chucked pretty much the Hippocratic Oath. Is that correct?
Oh, there's no question. The old Affordable Care Act was based on something called the complete life system, where the medical system should withhold care from people over I think it was 56, and people below the age of 16 because they weren't viable or they didn't contribute to society. So it was almost like a rigid system based on withdrawing care, of putting you in a hospice, and they gave rewards because of it, because you got paid more for talking about end-of-life decisions and you not doing a procedure that the person needed. So it was driving doctors to do these things, but it doesn't drive me, and it shouldn't drive any physician who is put on this earth to serve patients, not right. the system. And so that's really what's going on.
So anyone over the age of 56, that's really interesting because, you know, we don't know the number of our days. There's only one person who does, and that's our Creator. But here's the thing. You've got people, if you look down through history, you've got people who were well beyond the age of 56 that were still massively productive and functioning and healthy and happy. And we're not helping people be truly healthy and truly happy. We're seeing them controlled. I mean, look at the way we're being treated in our own states over this COVID nightmare. Mm-hmm. No one is happy. I mean, you can't even congregate to give someone a hug for fear you're going to give them COVID.
Unless you are in the administration in some sort in your state, they seem to be able to do whatever they want. They can go travel, they can right. go out to restaurants, you can go, and it's just so arbitrary. But it's right. it's not arbitrary, actually, Lynn. It's no. about corporatization.
Well, absolutely.
You can go to a big box store, but you can't go to your mom and pop. You can buy on Amazon, you can use mm-hmm. all of these various entities that are corporate driven and probably owned by the same people. Mm-hmm. So the economy really shifted to them. And they shut out the middle class and entrepreneurs and mom and pops. That's what their goal was.
Well,
and
sure.
they're laughing at our faces, saying that by shopping at Amazon, you are supporting small business. No, you're not, because Amazon takes a cut off those small businesses. They lowball them. They've taken a lot out of circulation. And it's just complete nonsense. On that note, I know we have to take a break and come back. And I'm going to stop proselytizing and let you talk. You're living in the solution. Welcome back to Living the Solution. We're speaking with Ms. Lynn Taylor. People need to go to her website, commoncorediva.com. There's a wealth of information. There's research. There's links. Nothing that you do, Lynn, is just, you know, talking in thin air. You do your research. You do the work. I can imagine how much time you spend on these things.
Well, it's a lot. And I do it because I want people to be equipped and armed with not what I think, but what their own words, what their own documents are showing that is being done to us. And this is one of the solutions that I want to challenge parents to do. Be that kind of parent, be that thorn in the side of your school board member or your school teachers. And even if your school isn't open, you still can make a difference, because I can tell you those lessons are still going online. And that's a big part of this AI shift, where you can be controlled and what you see on the screen is not going to match what's in the textbook. But we've been over that before, Dr. Elena, about this is keeping parents out of the loop. Remember, the parents are being kept out of the loop on purpose. So mm-hmm. if the parents know this, they can turn that back on those who are marginalizing them. And there are a myriad of ways that you can do that. And the number one way is to be informed, not with emotions. And I'm not saying don't raise your voice if you need to. What I'm saying is you can use facts, you can use research. And that's why my blog is set up the way it is, so that I show you where the evidence is, so that you can take it to your local level. And I do mean your down the street school or your state house, and you can take it to the federal level, and you can say, show me where in the Constitution this was okay. Show me in the Bill of Rights. Show me in the Civil Rights Act. Show me in the federal laws that prohibit all overreach from a federal standpoint into anything with education. Show me where you know, show me where the money is. Show me where the rubber hits the road. And nine times out of 10, you're going to hear people who are talking head bureaucrats, or what I call educrats, give you stupid answers. So, you know, give them more questions. Keep pushing them. Keep going after what you know the truth is. And the truth is, the government never has your child's best interest when it comes to education or even their job or what their life is like. They don't have their best interest in mind. What they do have is, how can Johnny and Susie fit into my economic plan so that America can be part of the greater global good?
It's even worse now because it's all supposed to be driven by AI. So there's less jobs available, and those jobs that are not very, I would say, exciting.
You know,
if we're talking about pushing a button and doing widget work or whatever you want to do, that's not what God put you on this earth to do.
No, I mean, I'm not trying to be rude here, but I mean, pushing a button is something that we've seen scientists train monkeys to do. We are far more advanced than monkeys. We are far more creative, and there is so much more that we can accomplish than coding or pushing a button or, you know, I don't know. I'm not trying to go off of opinion here. I'm going off of research, and I don't mean to stumble, but it so frustrates me that we're seeing this happen, not just to our children, but to our adults. Because again, remember, this is a cradle to grave system. This is part of the plan. If you're not skilled in the way the government thinks you need to be, you're going to be reskilled.
I understand why you're passionate about it, because you're an educator. And one of the things that you guys do is you see potential and you help it blossom, and you're seeing potential getting crushed. So I totally understand why you're passionate about it. I feel the same way in the medical sphere.
Right.
And we have to want more for ourselves. We have to want more for our children. I think it comes down to that.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just was going to say, along those lines, as you were speaking that, I was thinking, and we have to expect more and demand more from those who say they are in charge. And if they're not doing what we want, get them out of office. Get them out of their position.
Well, let's talk about the local level. Since I'm not really familiar, who votes for the school boards? How can parents remove them if they're not doing a good job, if their school is not performing the way it is? How can they just keep staying there and failing upward?
Well, you know, that's interesting, because it depends on what state you're in. Do you have local school board elections, or is your school board appointed? Now, part of the technocracy movement for school boards is to totally eradicate them, because parents, again, are usually the ones who serve on these school boards, Dr. Elena, and parents are not anything other than breeders when it comes to artificial intelligence or the technocratic movement. Parents have no skin in the game, according to them. Now, this is not my opinion, okay? I think parents are phenomenal, okay? They're supposed to be the child's first teacher. They're supposed to be the child's first nurturer. They're supposed to be so many mentor, you know, guidance, all kinds of things. So, you know, parents have a huge responsibility. But this corporatized public-private partnership goulash, if you will, from the technocratic movement has parents as nothing more than breeders. So if we get rid of all the parents on all the school boards, we can control those school boards. And this is why the charter school movement, this is why the privatization of public education through public-private partnerships is so toxic, is because the school boards are not elected, they're appointed. But even those through the accreditation bodies are being micromanaged into not doing what your school wants or what's best for your school, but here's what it needs to happen so that you can take that accreditation and you can still make Johnny and Susie's credentials or their diplomas worth something. Because if you don't have that accreditation, then you can't go on to this higher education, or you can't go apply for this job. And, you know, it's a sick system.
It's all about to follow the money is what mm-hmm. you're doing, what you're saying. Mm-hmm. And in 20 years, colleges have gone from producing journalists and doctors and lawyers or whatever to these social justice people mm-hmm. who have intersection of whatever. I mean, and but they're not being paid by going out and opening up a shingle. I think they're getting paid from NGOs and other mm-hmm. sources of money. So they have all the time in the world because it's not real world money. They don't have to go out and make a payroll and provide a service. They're not providing any service except to disrupt and mm-hmm. divide.
And that's it. Disrupt and divide, discord. And that's, you know, that was one of the things that just broke my heart over the twisting of the critical race theory and the twisting of social justice, is that you're sowing so many seeds of discord when we don't need any more discord. We have plenty without falsely turning up the flame.
I agree. But I also think it may be also a little overblown. We if you watch TV, everybody hates everybody. But in the real world, when you're sitting at a restaurant table and there's people of all sexes and races laughing and playing sports together, it's not on the ground level. They make it just like they make the United States citizen seems like we're the minority and they can do whatever we want because they're bigger than we are. Everybody's power comes from individuals. Mm-hmm. The hospitals can't work without doctors, and we need to stand up for ourselves and stop towing the line there too. Mm-hmm. The schools can't work without teachers. You know, it's the people who are on the ground who really control things. But for whatever reason, we've all ceded our authority. We're all trying to be nice and get along. But when it stinks, it stinks. And I don't think you can wait on somebody's tender mercies to change things because they have power, and power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, doesn't it?
Oh, it absolutely does. And, you know, one of the things that I learned from Tom DeWeese, who is over at American Policy Center, he's done massive work on the artificial intelligence, the United Nations, you know, the loss of property rights and how it all goes into the Sustainable Development Goals. And we know that education, jobs, and health are woven into those Sustainable Development Goals. But he was wonderful at opening my eyes about how quickly those we elect at a local level are taken and indoctrinated to turn their back to those people who put them in office and start kowtowing to those non-governmental associations or those public-private partnerships. And I can tell you, in the town I live in the middle of Podunky Little Old North Carolina, okay, they have totally taken this system over. And so anytime you go to speak out against what they're doing and show them through state statutes or federal statutes or documentation about here's how they're disserving us at a local level, unless you have a large group, what happens? You somehow get treated as less than. You get marginalized. You have to keep being consistent, but show up in numbers. Mm-hmm. You know, no man's an island. That's an old, old saying. And it's true. We have to be in like-minded groups when confronting those who mean our families harm.
I think that's the kernel of today's show. We got to take our power back, and we need to form groups and help ourselves. Now we're the show's come to an end. I just want to make sure people can find you. How can they go to your blog and mm-hmm. find your new podcast?
Okay. The new podcast will be out on Brighton. It's under the name of Liberty Bells, and it's B-E-L-L-E-S. That's going to be on Thursday mornings. You can also find my blog. It's commoncorediva.com. I do have a donate button, so if you wish to finally bless what I do, because what I do is a labor of love, I would greatly appreciate it. If not, prayer support is always welcome. You can find me on localactivist.org, which is a part of Citizens for Free Speech. And I urge you to look at that particular organization as well, because if we want to be able to stand against the status quo, we have to be able to freely speak. You can find me on Telegram. You can find me on Twitter, MeWe, USA.life, and Breaking News Journal TV.
Lynn, I love having you on. I can't wait to have you back. I'm sure we've only scratched the surface as usual, but I know I'm going to be able to learn a lot more when I have you back on the show. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Dr. Elena. It's always such a joy to be with you.
Oh, right back at you, and God bless.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you, everybody, for living in the solution.
Revolutionary Talk for Revolutionary Times. Liberty Talk FM.